Jaguars Today is next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
First and goal from the one. James Stewart already has 4 rushing touchdowns. What will he get here? Here's a handoff. James Stewart running right. Has room. Touchdown. That's 5. James Stewart's 5th rushing touchdown, and the Jaguars lead the Eagles 34-7.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, welcome in. It is the final day of the broadcast month of May. Ryan O'Halloran, Mike Dempsey here with you. Fat Tony, Joe Fortunato, Jaguars Today live from Everbank Field. Ryan, you opened Jaguars Today as the first co-host at the end of April, and you close out the merry month of May. How about that?
It's a good honor.
I'm honored to have you here.
You know, it shows that maybe the show is gaining some traction.
Perhaps it is. We haven't dumped you yet. They haven't dumped us yet out of the building, right? We're still here, as far as we know. You know, now you're going to be on red alert today for OTA specifics, okay? Don't get me thrown off the air.
Well, I have Everbank Field. Blake Bortles was incredible yesterday.
Wasn't he sharp?
18 and 19 for 420
this
yards.
This is during the team portion of practice, right?
4 touchdowns. No interceptions. He's only in completion of the drop. That's right. He wasn't here.
That's right. He wasn't here. But had he been, those would have been the numbers. Yeah. However, the great thing is, had he been here, we wouldn't have been able to tell you that. But since he wasn't, we can make up anything we want.
Yeah, I mean, this time next week, we can talk all we want about the Thursday OTA.
This is correct.
Open to the public. And just I couldn't find a way to write it the right way about Bortles' absence along with Lee and Robinson is they went to this thing in L.A., and even if they didn't go, they were prohibited from participating today. It's this joint league PA agreement. So
that because of this event, because it's like a sponsored event. So even if they choose not to go, they couldn't have practiced.
Correct.
So they have to go, basically.
Yeah, basically, might as well go.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's just we'll get to the PA later, but it just seems
you're
like...
You're itching chew into D. Smith today.
I will, and we'll get. There's plenty to chew on there with that guy. But it just with the truncated offseason, with the draft being late, I mean, does one day make a big difference? No, but I, you know, these guys are professionals now. They should be given this option if they want to be here. Fine.
You would think, you know, and I don't know what the schedule's like around the rest of the league, but you could perhaps schedule OTAs. You know, if everyone's holding them midweek and having the weekends off, couldn't you do this on a Saturday, for instance, something like that? But like you said, it's a money issue. This is you know, you've got trading card companies that are in league with the league, the NFLPA, and you know they're going to get their benefit out of that.
I don't get the trading card thing. I mean, do kids do that anymore? I mean, I did it. I mean, my brother and I, there's plastic bins of baseball cards in my dad's.
Walk into Walmart or any of those other stores, and there is a wall of them. You know, so I think maybe the Pokemon stuff is more popular these days. I can't get my kid into the trading cards. I was all into it too, man. But it was, you had one company doing it back in the day.
Tops.
That was it.
Donruss for baseball.
Well, in 81, Donruss and Fleer came in, and then it was 3, but then, you know, it exploded. And, you know, football cards, you couldn't even find them in a lot of places back when we were kids. But now they're everywhere, you know. And immediately, they're on eBay, you know, rookie cards, $80 at a minimum. So, hey, look, they went. They saw they conquered. More reps for Ricky Stanzi, which is obvious. I don't think that's any secret. We're not giving away the farm. And, you know, Gus did mention him, singled him out yesterday in his comments after practice that he really kind of surprised the team coming in how prepared he was for this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I just threw that up to the coach just to keep it going because he, you know, just to see what he said. And I didn't expect that answer, how they were impressed and surprised because – I guess they have to be surprised if he did well because he just hasn't been on the field.
Right.
I mean, he probably took very minimal reps during practice last regular season, and he got here just in time for the last preseason game. So, I mean, you know.
Did you notice something about just the way he was throwing? Because I thought, you know, the very first practice when I went out there, and I don't even think it was 11-on-11s yet, I thought, man, he's really throwing the ball pretty well. It's not that big a deal. You expect guys to throw the ball well in this situation. There's no real live rush coming at you. But what made you go that direction?
Just the direction why I asked, and we asked about Morris too, is just, okay, Bortles wasn't here yesterday.
Right.
Okay.
Other guys getting an opportunity.
Other guys get a chance because yeah. Morris took, you know, Morris was a spectator those first 2 days. So, and from, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, I think, in terms of, you know, if they do keep three quarterbacks, you're going to keep one rookie, obviously. You're going to keep Henny, the veteran. You know, do you slide toward Morris as a developmental guy, or do you go with Stanzi, who, granted, he hasn't played, but he at least knows his way around a playbook?
Right, and you keep Stanzi, too, and all apologies to him. If you don't feel Bortles is ready, if you really feel like the gap between him being ready, if Henny were to get hurt, is there, at the very least, Stanzi is like cannon fodder. You know what I mean? I mean, he's a buffer that you don't have to put the guy in there. You're certainly not going to throw Steven Morris in that situation. So, like you said, he's been around the league. He's been around a few camps. Hasn't played much at all in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. But you brought him up, and then Gus went on to say Chad Henne, Cecil Shorts, Jonathan Cyprian, who Tony and I sat down with a couple hours ago. You'll hear that interview coming up later on today, and Andre Branch have been guys that have caught his eye so far.
Yeah, I mean, he's with Branch is an interesting case because, I mean, they clearly had to tear him down, then them try and build him back up, fix his work habits, you know, say, you know, you're on notice. There was no market for him at the end of the preseason when they put him out there. They made the team. And, you know, and Gus sort of took baby steps publicly in terms of he first was, well, he's playing hard. But then you see that sack, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, so maybe he's turned another corner. I mean, he's a backup. He's a rotation guy. But if he can give them 4 and 5 sacks or maybe a little bit more and overtake Babin for a spot, maybe he can be a little bit more of a success. But with Andre, it's still wait and see.
Well, I mean, certainly the second half of the year, at least in the sack category, he put up better numbers than he had up to the first, you know, year and a half of his career.
And I think a big thing with Branch in the second half of last year is he cut down on some of the penalties that were stupid, and he freely admitted that they were stupid. So, you know, once you clean that up, then you start making some plays. And the one good thing is he didn't play himself out of a position on a certain play. He wouldn't over pursue. So he was more disciplined in the scheme, so he was there to get a couple cleanup sacks.
Claude Noah Cadillac brings you the show every Friday. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Hower, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. One of the things Tony and I asked Jonathan about is, tell us something to look for, because I think it's so difficult outside of QBs, wide receivers, and defensive backs in these kind of practices for us. Even if we wanted to and were able to report on some of the specifics, I couldn't tell you what I'm looking at half the time with the defensive linemen, the offensive linemen, guys like that. So I'm curious to get an opportunity to ask Gus a little bit more about that. And he might pop in today. If not, we'll get him on next week. And just what are you looking for as a coach when you're out on the field that shows you in a non-contact situation that those guys are progressing?
Yeah, to me, the first thing you ask would be, how do you know if a lineman is doing well?
Right.
I mean, the first thing, okay, is he staying on his feet? Because they don't want anybody flopping around. So, are they looking, is it strictly a technique thing? Hands, feet? Are they, you know, besides knowing the play? That would be my thing. And also is, you know, linebackers in terms of covering tight ends, can they do it? So, but let's face it, during these OTAs and until they put the pads on, it's basically a passing camp. You know, you can, there's 11 guys out there, but you're watching the ball.
And with that, as Gus singled out Chad Henne, said, you know, he really feels like he's more confident, more in command of what he's doing. He mentioned him a couple of times this week. Just your general impression without the specifics of what you saw out of the Jags starter.
Well, you know, the comfort level is there because the newness isn't there. You know, last year at this time, and perfectly understandably, there were a lot of stops and starts, okay? Line up there, you're not supposed to be there. You know, what's the snap count? You know, am I supposed to be under center? The operation looked a lot smoother this week in terms of, for, you know, not a lot, you know, false starts. He didn't have to direct guys going, you know, in the wrong direction and stuff. So he looks like he's in good command. And one thing he said when the offseason started last month was, now that he knows he's the starter, the more he feels more comfortable to speak up. I mean, last year he waited his turn. And that developed as the season went. Now you look at it from his perspective is, I'm the starter. There's no Maurice. There's no Meester. There's no Uche.
He's got to be the lead. You're right. There's a vacuum of leadership.
You know, because right now on that offense, it's him and Cecil and Beatles.
Right.
And then you wait for Gerhardt, you know, think he'll develop. And Mercedes is, you know, we'll find the right time to say something.
And I think it's tough for a guard free agent to come in from another organization, no matter what kind of success you've had, and immediately kind of assert yourself in that leadership role.
Yeah, and, you know, especially on the whole unit. I mean, right now, I mean, I'm told that he's already done it inside the O-line, which
that,
is what he
that
should
would be expected, right.
But I think once you get in the, once you get further in the camp, you'll see that. But, you know, you look at the center spot, I think if you would have had Mac here, he would have been another vocal guy right away because there needs to be such that synergy. But the guys were impressed with the way Brewster was directing traffic this week as well.
Yeah, Cecil Shorts got singled out. He got singled out last year as well. I mean, we remember the first couple of days of training camp, the guy looked like he was going to go out there and catch 100 passes last year. For him, is he quicker? Is he noticeably different athletically, or is it just a matter of the confidence is there now? He really is starting to feel like he's coming into his own, and it's just a matter of staying healthy this year.
Probably yes on all those. I mean, you mentioned last year at camp, those first couple of days, nobody could cover him. Then I think it was a groin, which was sort of the start of a, you know, up, down, down, injured.
Right,
you
know, lingering situation.
So if I'm Gus, I mean, one thing I enter camp with is, okay, even if Cecil's totally healthy, I manage his snaps because I just want him to get to week one in one piece. And, you know, without a hamstring, without a groin, et cetera. You know, and I think he developed a comfort level with Henny because going into last year, he really hadn't played a lot with Gabbert either. So, you know, you see some of the synergy there. So, and, you know, Cecil's the kind, I mean, he's going to look good in these, you know, because he's a better player than some of these corners. So, I mean, I think that was a positive that he went through the whole week in one piece.
All right, he's Ron O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here along with you live from Everbank Field. It's Jaguars Today. We wrap up our first full broadcast month here on the network. We'll be joined by Jonathan Ciprian a little bit later on. Tony caught up with offensive tackle Austin Pastor yesterday in the Jaguar locker room post-practice, so you'll hear that interview coming your way as well. We'll look around the National Football League, find out what's going on in the minds of Demoris Smith and some of the players, and O'Halloran will weigh in on his love affair with D. Smith. I think it's fair to say. It's a fair way to characterize that. If you want to get on board today, variety of ways to do it. You can call the show at 641-1010. You can tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. When we come back, we'll tell you what the fan feedback question of the day is. Friday's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac since 1905. Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer in all of Northeast Florida. Visit them at ClaudeNolan.com or call them at 642-5111. Just getting rolling. Jaguars Today coming back live here at Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union. Remiss already I am for not mentioning George Yarno, and best thoughts and prayers from all of us going out to he and his family. As we found out yesterday, he revealed that he had been diagnosed with cancer. That's all the details. As the team and George obviously want to maintain his privacy on that issue, but he's going to do his best to be around the football team, Ryan, and a guy that you see the linemen talk about him, saying he's the most fun guy in the room. He's full of energy. I think the players like him. And he's not taking a leave of absence. He's not taking a permanent break from the team, but the team's going to do everything they can to accommodate whatever he needs in his treatment, in his battle against cancer.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule for the next 2 months sort of gives them some leeway there because they take most of the first part of July off anyway. So, and the fact that you have Luke Buck is already on the staff as an assistant line coach, they don't really have to change anything. But, you know, hopefully by the time camp starts, George will be back on a regular basis.
Yeah, so best to him, and we'll keep you updated if there are any further updates to pass along. In the meantime, just thinking of him, and I'm sure all the folks here at Everbank are doing the same thing. You, this weekend, you spent a lot of time this week gathering intel to break down the latest position that's all the rave with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So long, Sam. Hello, Otto.
Sam is out. Otto's in.
I've been talking to as many people as possible for a Sunday story on that. And basically is they wanted a guy who was better, who could be play the run, could cover a tight end, could rush the passer, and all in one guy, so they won't, so they have to take him off the field automatically on third down just to give them some more options. And one thing that guys talked about is sort of like Bruce Irvin in Seattle, but then maybe asking him to do more things and be on the field more than Bruce Irvin. So
you hated the idea of Khalil Mack. Had they not loved Bortles, right? Had they not loved any of the quarterbacks enough to take him in the top five, what do you think their impression of Khalil Mack was in that kind of versatile role?
Well, that's
is he an Otto or a Leo?
That's the interesting part, because it never. I thought about, like, do I pursue this? Well, he's not here, so it doesn't really matter. But Gus was adamant at the owners' meetings. He would be a Leo for the Jaguars. Okay, so would that mean they would try to teach him some linebacker stuff? If he was drafted here, he would be in the defensive line meeting room from the start. So that tells me he's a Leo, and they would still have Watson as this new outside linebacker.
Right.
So, I mean, if it wasn't Bortles, it was going to be Watkins. That's what I think.
Yeah. You think Watkins? Yeah. You think Evans was in the discussion? Particularly if it wasn't Bortles, if they didn't look, or let's say Bortles went, right? Let's say Bortles went, Clowney went because somebody. Or St. Louis took him, whatever. And they're sitting there at three, and Atlanta's offering a third-round pick to move down three spots, which is what Dave Caldwell said they got offered. You think they take that and take their chances and take Evans, or, you know, as a consolation prize, or do you think they might have liked Evans more than Watkins?
My guess, just I think they would have stayed put and taken Watkins. You know, would they have been satisfied? You know, it all depends on what their plan was to get a quarterback.
Isn't it funny how, you know, Dave Caldwell asked him about it, might have been the Friday after the first round, you know, because said people were talking about already, why didn't they take that deal from Buffalo? Why didn't they try to get a quarterback later? Well, we've been through that. If you mm-hmm. feel like you love the quarterback, you stick there. It is odd, though, if Buffalo's willing to give that to move up to four, why wouldn't you give that to move up to three? The exact same package is, I don't think, any less attractive for one spot, you know? Mm-hmm. And they did call the Jags, but they never really made a firm offer or got into specifics. I don't know if they got the sense that they weren't going to move, or that the Jags were likely to maybe take Sammy themselves and therefore wouldn't trade out of the spot. I don't know.
I mean, if the Jags would have taken Watkins, then would a Buffalo stayed put, you know, and maybe settled for Evans at, you know, or trying
they
to
wouldn't have gotten
bit.
Maybe.
Yeah,
so. You just don't know. They clearly loved Sammy Watkins in that scenario. And I thought it was very telling to hear Dave Caldwell say, look, had we gone wide receiver there, whether it was Watkins or Evans, let's say it was mm-hmm. Watkins, you know, what would we be looking at now? We would have been looking at what? That and Garoppolo, maybe, or trying to make a move up right there at the end of the first round for Bridgewater and pushing the panic button. Even use the word panic. Would we have panicked mm-hmm. and tried to move up and grab a quarterback?
And the way it played out is they would have had to move up, even to get Derek Carr,
right?
Because he went 34.
Yeah, he went to Oakland with their second pick, which is ahead of the Jags.
So they, you know, they probably in their mind they probably would have said, okay, whoever we like, we have to get ahead of Oakland. Because we know, and they might have to say.
Do you think they like Derek Carr number two? I saw who was it that I saw write that.
I'm not sure. I haven't had any chats with them about who they liked second best.
Right.
Because at this point,
well, it's point, but it's interesting.
It may be a summer conversation. But it seemed like obviously the way they picked
June 21st. We'll put that down.
I'll have to make a call on June 29th.
That'll be a Sunday story late in the next month coming up.
What if not? But obviously they had Blake
so
far away,
the head of the class. So. And just overall, OTAs, other than guys we've talked about, what, if anything, or any players have stood out to you this week?
I thought Winston Guy is taking advantage of his opportunity. I thought even before Evans' foot surgery, which was a week ago Tuesday, that Guy would be the week one starter at free safety. It seems to be on the right track there. Gus likes him a lot, thinks he has some potential there.
Talked him up in one of his post-practice pressers there, and talked about the fact that he's got that strong safety size and physicality, but enough
range
to play free safety, and almost like they really obviously are putting a lot on increasing their ability to stop the run this year. And I think having both of those, he and Cyprian on the field, are going to go a long way to doing that, maybe.
Yeah, and the one thing I had mentioned the other day in here was, except for Evans, there doesn't seem to be any injury issues right now. They're taking it slow with Miller, Shorts, Jokel, Brewster, Harbor, all back from their surgeries. So I took that as a positive that you didn't see a ton of guys except for Colvin on the bikes.
Which was to be expected with him, obviously.
And so with these guys getting their OTA work in, is they're not going to be starting from scratch in July. You know, everybody should be able to hit the ground running when camp starts.
Yeah, I thought, you know, for Luke Jokel to say that no setbacks, nothing really. He hasn't really noticed anything. You know, he's going to have set off metal detectors for the rest of his life. But other than that, I think it is important for him to get in this early, all because although he's played left tackle before, hasn't done it much at this level. And I think every rep and Gus even talked about the left side of the offensive line, he said, and went as far as they continue to mention Mike Brewster in that conversation, that they really are happy with him. The fact that Brewster and Jokel were able to work out together, really put a lot of time into developing their bodies when they had a lot of downtime and kind of push each other in that regard. Brewster's come back, I think, noticeably bigger. And I don't know if they can tell enough from what he's done on the field, because, again, it's a non-contact situation, but I think they like the approach that he's taken and the work that he's put in. And when he starts talking about that offensive line, it's you got Jokel, you got Beatles, you got Brewster. We feel that that's almost set right there. Pretty happy with Pastor as well, and then the competition is on at right guard.
I mean, yeah, I think that's on the mark in terms of they probably go into camp with four of the five spots set, and then they're just going to let a couple guys battle it out at right guard. And
who's the dark horse there to push? Because Linder, I think, is the what I would expect when you trade up into the third round. I think the public would expect that's your opening day starter.
Yeah, and I think that will turn out that way. They want him to win it because that's why they
right. They don't want to hand him the spot.
Yeah, you know, so words. And they also want to you know. But dark horse, I mean.
Is there a guy? I mean, is there one guy that could come out and really push to win that?
I mean, if it's not Linder, then you know McClendon finished the year at that spot last year at left guard, so they moved him over to the right side. I mean, he wouldn't be a dark horse because we sort of know about him. But I mean, I think it's a two-person race, and I'd be surprised if it's still not Linder week one.
All right, 98% is a pretty high percentage out of 100, right? And Gus was smiling, and he said. Quite certain, 98% was the number he put on it, that we will see Chris Clemens on Monday. You characterized Gus as being pissed.
People like that comment.
They did like that comment. Our friends at Big Cat Country retweeted that one out, and that got a lot of play as they follow along and tweet a lot of the quotes on the show. But he was noticeably, that anger was diffused a little bit, I think, as the week went on. To me, it was the lack of communication as much as anything. Not the absence, right?
That was 98% of it.
To
stay with that
to
number.
To use that number.
Because, I mean, they didn't, you know, if you're not going to be here Monday, you know, they sort of knew maybe, possibly, but call to confirm, you know, okay, then by the time Gus talked after Tuesday's practice, they at least discussed it. So, because, you know, when Gus walked out to the practice on Tuesday for the Bartram Trail thing, I said, Clemens here. He goes, no, not yet. But he said, I did talk to him. You know, to me, that meant the situation had turned at least somewhat positive. But I tell you what, he was pissed on Monday. If he's not here this Monday, he's going to be livid. But I'm told he's going to be in town Sunday night.
I almost felt like, barring every plane flight being canceled, that he guaranteed Gus that he was going to be in town for that.
Yeah, and you know, Clemens is a veteran, and you know, I was told that when he signed here, they somehow understood he wouldn't be a big part of the off-season conditioning, but that he would be here for the start of OTAs. And you know, just even if you're not going to do a lot, just your presence means a lot, because it's just one guy and you just signed here and guys haven't met you yet. So, you know, if he shows up next week for three of them and then disappears again, is that ideal? No, but at least you know he's upright.
Right, that he's in the program, yeah. And all that. You look, like you said, you show up, you can give him days off, you can manage those veterans a little bit. When does Red Bryant get his first day on the sideline? Because he's adjusting to the Florida. Speaking of 98, pushing 98 on the Mercury.
I tell you what, it was the first 2 days were miserable. Even assistant coaches are saying it's hot out here.
Yeah.
You know, Red Bryant's first off day of training camp, July 29th probably.
Yeah.
I think he'll be on a 2 days on, 1 day off schedule.
Right.
I think Roy Miller will be the same way. They know what they can do. Get them ready.
Yeah, we all kind of joked after the rookie minicamp, like these guys who are not like, Bortles and Storm Johnson know how hot it gets down mm-hmm. here. Some of these other guys are in for a rude awakening.
Well, I remember Puzlesny coming from Penn State and Buffalo, and he told the story the other day again. He never thought he'd get through the first camp here. He couldn't believe it. And this is the fittest guy in 10 countries here.
Right.
I mean, he said it was just oppressive. And so he laughed. He laughed when Red Bryant said that, used to playing in an air conditioner. Was not going to get any better.
Yeah, Red Bryant's a big boy, too. All right. Today, your Tom Bush Family of Dealership Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking Jaguar fans what drives you. We want to know, in honor of having Jonathan Cyprian on later in the show, I don't know if small school is the way to characterize it, but which non-BCS draft pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars was the best draft pick? Which Jaguar drafted from a non-BCS school? There are some obvious candidates for this. The list is not that long, but send your thoughts via Twitter at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. By the way, we have threatened the mollywop if you're not following all these people on Twitter. I think I picked up 11 for Lauren last night.
Sweet.
I was checking.
Hey, if people aren't following Lauren Brooks.
Seriously.
I mean,
right?
Very good shtick.
Good shtick, and apparently something going on with Joe Fortunato that we're not privy to as far as that goes. I don't know.
Interesting laugh.
Nothing untoward, Lauren. Just basing this on conversations that I'm hearing.
I'm about to lose my followers.
No, are you kidding me? You just doubled them right now. That's not how Twitter works, all right? If you want to jump on board, we'll open up the phone lines next. Apparently they've been down 641-1010. You can also weigh in facebook.com/Jaguars today.
Looking at the draft on the question is, have a lot of options during the Gene Smith.
Well, there were a lot of options, but not many good options.
Look at 2010, Louisiana Tech, Central Arkansas, Murray State, Southern Illinois, James Madison. What the hell is going on here?
But trust in Gene. Believe in Gene, right? And that what we heard the mantra? I believe that's what it was back in the day.
Was that really a mantra?
Trust in Gene. That was definitely one of them, Tony. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was I don't know, mantra, like a little Twitter hashtag, that kind of thing going on. That look, I get it. You can say the same thing about Dave Caldwell. Everyone's got, I don't know about blind faith, but a lot of faith in Dave Caldwell. He's had one draft class. Did pretty well. His number one pick got hurt. We only saw him for a quarter of the season.
That's
so
right. Devoted to Dave.
Devoted to Dave, the general, and all this stuff. And we have no reason to doubt that yet. I'm just saying, Gene Smith's first draft class looked okay after year one. Quickly devolved at that point in time.
And before you go, just want to thank a Twitter follower here who's quoting me in Spanish.
Excellent.
Listening to the
Are
show,
you sure so. He's quoting you accurately? Do you speak Spanish?
No.
All right. So, gracias.
Hopefully he's not saying Ryan O'Halloran thinks they're going to go 14-2.
Ryan O'Halloran said Blake Bortles went 17 of 20 yesterday at practice. Does he not realize he's in Los Angeles? Hashtag.
Go to TMZ to find out.
Crazy man. All right. Coming back, again, the question of the day, which non-BCS draft pick was the best in Jaguar history? I think that makes sense. Yeah. Hate to call them small schools. FIU has 50,000 students enrolled there. That's not a small school, but it doesn't play in the highest level of conference affiliation in college football. All right, I'm going to dig myself out of that hole right now with Jonathan Cyprian coming up a little bit later on. Also, Austin Pastor, and we'll get Ryan teed up to talk about one of his favorite men in the National Football League. That's straight ahead on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Let your voice be heard. Pick up the phone and dial 641-1010. Time for Jag fans to have your say.
You can certainly do that if you choose to. 641-1010, the number, as always, to get in. Jaguars Today and all across 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union. In Gene we trust. That's what it was.
That's what it was.
Remember that? As soon as I get that from a few folks on the tweet box, and they're not happy. So, why bring it up? I'm just saying. It was a thing. That's why. It's good to embrace the pain. Then you know how far you've come.
This is funny. That's why you brought it up.
Oh, it's hilarious. And Gene, and it was like blind devotion. And that's okay. Look, it's fandom, whatever. But it's funny how you can go from complete and utter devotion to complete and utter disdain over a short 4-year period.
It
only took 4 years to rip that down.
It was quick.
For a lot of people. All right, let's get into, speaking of disdain or devotion, what a terrific setup that is. Roger Goodell is not a beloved figure among players. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I don't know why. They play the game. They're paying money. I'm not sure how they think he impacts them.
I think part of the reason why, and just talking, and I'm doing the show with Maurice over the last few years, I get his opinion on it, and so a lot of it's filtered through that. But we've had other guests on the program talking about this issue. They're sissifying the game. They're changing the way we can play football.
That part I agree with.
Okay, well, okay, but that's one of the things. Judge, jury, and executioner, that line is used a lot, despite the fact that they've collectively bargained mm-hmm. him to have that right to do that. Why does he have that much power? Well, you agreed to give him that much power. There's a disconnect on that. Those are a couple of the reasons. I think when it comes to punishment that's handed down, suspensions for on-field play, I don't think anybody is going to quibble if you violate the drug policy, legitimately violate the drug policy. I don't hear too many people standing up for guys getting DUIs and things mm-hmm. like that. But those are a couple of the reasons, I think. They feel like he's the owner's guy. Well, he is the owner's
guy. As he should be.
Right, but that's, their perception is, Maurice will tell me, there's no league without us. Well, there's really no league without the guys who have the money mm-hmm. to put it on. If all the players were to go away, eventually new players would be brought in. We wouldn't recognize them all right away, but you'd develop new stars. Yeah, look, it wouldn't be the same quality of football. I'm not saying you can have what they have now. The NFL is so successful because you've got these fantastic players. Plus, on the business side of things, they've got these partnerships with the TV networks and all these sponsors, and they leverage cities into building them world-class stadiums, and all these things are going on, and it's popularity to this point seemingly has not peaked yet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I don't have any issues. I mean, you mentioned judge, jury, and executioner. There, I think it was Deshaun Goldston last year who got suspended, but then it was Romeo Crennel who lifted the suspension. So Goodell sort of put that into somebody else's hands, and I think that was a big deal, because when you're suspending guys for hits, then you're hurting then you're impacting the game. If you're suspending guys for getting in trouble with DUIs and beating people up, then you are you're being an idiot. You deserve to be suspended.
Right. And well, part of it also is they feel like you're changing, now you're suspending us for these hits. You're trying to change the game, but at the same time, these players, a lot of them, the former players certainly, are suing the league. And so what do you expect the NFL's reaction to that to be? But to protect itself, mm-hmm. In a court of law, ultimately.
That's where I have no sympathy for the players on that concussion lawsuit, because their lawyers agreed to the settlement. They're being thrown another lifeline right now because the judge says that's not good enough.
Right.
Why is that?
When they put that out, Tony and I were just like, wow, really? $2 billion for all these guys for all these years? You know how quickly that is just going to disappear?
Yeah. And
you can only buy like an NBA team for that money.
I know.
And this painkiller suit is a complete joke.
The latest one?
Yeah. It's such a joke. I mean, just because you guys didn't take care of your money when you were playing, you're going to just try and sue now? You knew what you were popping. I mean, you knew you were taking the Toradol. You knew you were taking the perks because you wanted to play. So.
Well, I've yet to meet a guy, and that's a whole other issue, but I've yet to meet a guy, no matter how crippled he was, that has said that he would change anything about it. If he could either not do it and live a more pedestrian life, or suffer through it but have the glory that he had, they all chewed. Mm-hmm. Everyone to a man, I've yet to meet a single one, and every player I've interviewed that asked him
about
that.
It was worth it.
They all say it was worth it. Mm-hmm. They all say it was worth it. Anyway, there's certainly a sense of discontent with Roger Goodell among the rank and file, whether it's justified or not. It is there. It is fueled by Demora Smith. And I get it. There's got to be some contention. Gene Upshaw kind of worked his way through that and was more of a partner with the league on a lot of things.
And chiefly tags.
Right. But Demora Smith is more of an antagonist, and that's his prerogative. He's representing the players' rights, and so, you know, he's going to come at it from X point of view. But now he says there is a credibility gap because of the delay in punishing. We assume there's going to be some kind of punishment for Jim Irsay, which certainly you get caught. If a player got caught under the influence of medication that wasn't prescribed to him with unprescribed medication in his possession and $29,000 in cash in a laundry bag in their car, they would be basically characterized as a drug dealer, I think, by a lot of people. That's not the NFL's fault necessarily. That may be more of a media issue. What do you think about the Demora Smith latest comments about the commission?
Once again, he comes off as a buffoon. Every time I read an interview with him, it's never our fault. Nobody passes the buck more than this guy, when in reality he's the one that got his clock cleaned on the drug testing, on the guaranteed contracts. The only thing he really has won is there hasn't been an 18-game schedule yet, and the owners never even brought that to the table because they knew it was a non-starter. The only thing that would be more interesting on Irsay is, let's say he was also the general manager of the football team. To me, that would mean Goodell would have to act faster, because he can't just let him continue to do his job. Why hasn't Ray Rice been suspended yet? So I don't see the time crunch that everybody else sees with Irsay, because he isn't involved in the personnel decisions. If Goodell announces in mid-July that Jim Irsay is suspended from August 1st to November 1st, I think that would be a very...
What does the suspension for an owner consist of?
That's the thing, is if you suspend him, are you banning him from a building he owns?
Are you banning him from profiting on the enterprise during that period of time? Because players, when they get suspended, they're losing game checks. They're losing all the money that they're making off of their profession. How do you impact an owner in that regard?
Well, if you want to start a legal fight, that would do is say all the ticket revenues goes into charity.
Or right, which is what they do with player fines.
Yeah. So I mean, my guess is that when they do suspend Irsay, it would be that you are not allowed to attend the games. You're not allowed to be in the building during.
Will they drug test him?
I think
that's if I'm a player, and You're telling me Roger Goodell's introductory press conference said that owners would be held to and management would be held to a higher standard than players. I think that's fair. If you get caught with non-prescription narcotics or prescription narcotics that you don't have a prescription for, and you're driving around under the influence, I don't see why couldn't Jim Irsay be tested.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, if I'm a player, I mean, players are trained to say the following phrase: we should worry about only things we can control. They can't control.
I get that, but
this guy is such a moron.
I know you have a dislike for Demora Smith, but I can get from a player standpoint, if you're going to have Josh Gordon, and look, I get it. The rules are the rules, and you understand what goes into it, and you're in stage three of the program. You can be tested up to three times a month. But I think that's a big deal to players. I think the public embarrassment from Jim Irsay having to be acknowledged that he has to go pee in a cup is something that players would say, all right, there's a little equity to what we have to do. Is that such a bad thing?
I mean, I'm sure Irsay would do it just to avoid a further ban. But back to the PA.
Okay.
The PA doesn't give a crap about suspended players. That's every player will tell you that. They don't. I mean, not that Justin Blackmon deserves any sympathy. They don't care about him. They only care about the stars who are active.
How does that manifest itself?
If the day he suspended somebody from the PA, if they cared, should have flown down him and get him the proper help. Instead, he goes back. Who knows where he is? Who knows where he is? So you're serving. If you're going to be servicing these constituents, I don't think you're doing your job on that front. So I mean, it's for a situation where everybody is making more money than they could have ever imagined. It's just so combative. It's pathetic.
So you think it's basically, if you can help us, if you're on the field and you're raising our profile, yeah, we're going to help you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Drew Brees and you're speaking, you know, you're a model, you know, you're a face of the franchise. Hey, I'll come and vouch for you when you try to work on workman's comp nonsense.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not a union guy. I never have been.
Are there no programs, though? Are there no safety net programs? I mean, doesn't the NFL make support available to Justin Blackmon, whether it's directly through the NFLPA or not?
Well, that's what Shad Khan's comment was, is that they are. I mean, but I think at that stage, when a guy reaches that stage, he doesn't know he needs help. You know, so I think you force the issue. And I mean, I've talked to players on other teams who say, if you're suspended, you're persona non grata, you know, and especially for the PA to approve where a team cannot have contact with a suspended player is pathetic. So
I think one of the other issues, and we'll tie this up, but one of the other things when they talk about Irsay, and you're right about Ray Rice, because nothing has happened to Ray Rice yet.
It really, I mean, from a perspective of, should there have been something already
on Ray Rice?
Yeah, I mean, or Irsay? I mean,
my point on that was going to be, they felt you had Ben Roethlisberger, who was accused basically in the media. And never charged with a crime formally, got suspended by the commissioner, and they're like, well, where's his due process?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you've got Irsay getting caught in this situation where he has been charged now, and nothing's happened to him. I think that's an example that I've seen pointed to.
Well, I mean, I look at it from Goodell's perspective, is it okay, maybe he felt he made a mistake there. He's not a guy who admits mistakes. He'll never admit that. But maybe he looks back on that and he's listening to his counsel and say, "Hey, instead of we probably erred in that. Let's just hold on a little bit, do some investigating ourselves before we jump the gun and suspend a top running back for a quarter of the season."
Well, yeah, and that whole thing's political. If you admit that, then your boy D. Smith is going to have that as a chip in his pocket.
Yeah. Instead of jumping the gun like you did on Roethlisberger, is. Wait for Rice, because really on Rice is like, even if he's suspended the first game, he's going to be allowed to go to camp. So as long as you have a decision rendered by the time camp starts, then I don't see a problem with
it. I think it's also interesting, as some people have pointed out already, you've got John Harbaugh. This is kind of off the derivative path here, but John Harbaugh criticizing his guys for going out and getting drunk. He says, look, it's not just the DUIs, it's the fact that you're drinking to excess. We're supposed to be world-class athletes. Yet every statement about Ray Rice has been, we support Ray for, handling this the right way. It's like, hey, how about not punch your fiance and knock her out in an elevator? We haven't had that, but we've had the indignant John Harbaugh comments about guys who weren't even getting DUIs. Now they got thrown out of a bar because they're being too rowdy.
The rookie?
Jacoby Jones. Yeah. Taliaferro, that was a different instance. Okay. But you had three guys, Jimmy Smith, Jacoby Jones, and there was another player.
Bernard Pierce.
All were in a bar, and they got tossed out for being, over-served. And
so
obnoxious.
Their whole running back depth chart.
Basically,
is
in one form or another.
Well, from Harbaugh's perspective, is he's sort of he's at his point where he can get away with that, so he probably looked at it and says, "Enough's enough. Don't be idiots."
Right.
So,
all right, Rhino Howard and Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Coming up, we've got This Date in Jaguar History.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, This Date in Football History brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in 1943, one of the greats of the NFL was born. That would be Gale Sayers. He turns 71 years old today. And the guy who played, I believe, the fewest seasons, I want to say 6 years in the NFL, that is enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame because he had such an incandescent brief career. People bring him up when Terrell Davis's name comes up for consideration. We've got our own guy in Jacksonville, Tony Boselli, that didn't play that long but played at an extremely high level. Sayers, nobody questions his spot in the Hall of Fame. At least I've not heard anybody question his spot in the Hall of Fame. I've heard Pete Prisco bring up this before. It's interesting. Dwight Stevenson, formerly of the Miami Dolphins, is in the Hall of Fame. Dwight Stevenson started 87 games, didn't start a single game his rookie year, only started 5 out of 16 games in his second year, and from that point on, every game he played, he started with Miami. So 87 starts, he's got 5 Pro Bowls, and he was a 4-time first-team All-Pro. Tony Boselli has 90 starts in the NFL, only didn't start one game his rookie season. He is a 5-time Pro Bowler, like Dwight Stevenson, and was a 3-time All-Pro first-teamer. So just one less first-team All-Pro. Tony Boselli ever get into the NFL Hall of Fame?
Not for a while.
I don't. It won't be for a while.
It's a log jam. I mean, just you know, I don't have a list in front of me of other tackles, but I'll give you just a quick stat on Sayers: 68 career games.
68 career games. Yeah. So you know, we just said Boselli played 90, and you know, shorter seasons, but still, you know, I think the thing with Sayers is he was just breathtaking. The highlights. You don't have those kind of highlights when you're an offensive lineman, certainly.
I mean, his average kickoff return 30.6. That may stand for.
Ever. Yeah.
But Sayers last two seasons played a combined 4 games.
Right.
But
so he, really four great seasons.
Yeah. With Boselli, that's up to the person who represents Jacksonville in the Hall of Fame. You know, can he generate some momentum to present him? And
I mean, is that the main thing? I mean, if Tony Boselli toiled in Pittsburgh with the same exact resume, or Green Bay, or you name the high profile franchise.
I think so, because didn't play in a Super Bowl, so
but did play in 2 championship games. Played, I mean, the team was really good for the majority of his time here in Jacksonville.
I mean, I don't know.
Go up there and sell him, Mike.
I'm not providing anything here.
I think you can make. Just on an equitable basis, unless you want to argue that Dwight Stevenson doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, and that just because you diluted the Hall of Fame with this guy, that we shouldn't bring that down to everybody's level. That's kind of the baseball argument. You know, if so-and-so's in, this guy belongs in. Well, maybe so-and-so doesn't belong in there to begin with.
Well, it would be interesting to poll the 46 voters, I think, because if he's on the list, if Tony's on the list and he makes the cut, that gets him in the room, that gets him talked about.
Right.
Is, okay... How is he viewed around pro football by people who have covered this league for decades? What was his reputation? He obviously all pro, you know, career ended because of injury. So it just, you know, the Dwight Stevenson thing, you know, why he's in, but he also, it took him a long time to get in, right?
He had, I think he was a finalist 4 or 4 times, maybe the 5th time he got in.
That's the first door.
Right, he got to that stage.
Yeah, that's the first door for Tony's candidacy is to get in the conversation. Because that's where it gets you in line, you take a number.
Dwight Stevenson finished his career in 87, though. And the first time he became a finalist was 1993.
So one year
waiting period, and it's been much longer than that for Tony Boselli. I mean, I think it's an uphill climb. I don't think Fred Taylor will get into the Hall of Fame.
No.
People want to make a case for Fred, and you can make a case for Fred, particularly on the yards per carry average. That's the thing that stands out, because a lot of guys have compiled big yardage totals. And, you know, Fred's... Not, you know, the Pro Bowl with Fred is an interesting thing, too. I would argue if you really look at the seasons that a lot of those running backs had in the years that he got shunned for the Pro Bowl, that he may have been the 4th best running back in the AFC, and it was a variety of different guys. I think there's probably 1 or 2 seasons that he probably deserved it over guys clear cut that made it in, and certainly playing in Jacksonville, I'm sure, worked against him. And early on, his reputation for not being able to stay on the field.
Yeah, and I'm looking at some of the tackles who are in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You know, Dan Dierdorf, 13 years. You know, Luke Rosa was a kicker, but in more recent times, Anthony Munoz, 13 years. Willie Rofe, 13 years. You know, Art Shell back in the Raiders, 16 years. Jackie Slater, 19 years. So it seems like there is that line of demarcation.
There's no question that
that means it's going to get tough.
It's a longevity position in the National Football League. But, you know, much like Sayers and like Dwight Stevenson, you play at the top of your game basically for your entire career, and the only thing that kept you from continuing on that path. I don't know anybody who can argue that Tony Boselli, had he not gotten hurt, wouldn't have continued to be a dominant player at his position for another at least half decade.
And I am told that Boselli did not play in the 99 postseason, got hurt against Cincinnati, so one championship game, two AFC title teams.
That's fair. But that was a cornerstone of some very good playoff caliber teams.
Yes.
All right. So there you go. Fair enough. I don't think, I agree with you. It'll be a while if he does get in, particularly because he hasn't made it to that finalist level.
Would it help his candidacy if he goes, the broadcasting career? Was Dierdorf a Hall of Famer when he retired? Did Monday Night Football help him get in?
Maybe, but Tony's had, he's had a shot on the national level with that. He's done Westwood One national radio. Obviously, TV's more high profile. I mean, he was as far as this franchise, maybe the resurrection of the franchise. You know what I mean? Back to a playoff prominent franchise for an extended period of time and make people start, instead of being, I was reading an article last night. That was talking about Ace Sanders, and it said, Jacksonville, the city that had to apologize for airing Jaguar games. And I'm like, you idiot. As an Orlando Orlando is 140 miles from Jacksonville, 150 miles, whatever it is, from Jacksonville. New York and Philadelphia are about 50 miles closer. You're not going to say that Philadelphia is New York. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so it just the total lack outside of the market of respect for the franchise in the area, I think, plays a role.
I mean, I thought they're going to have blackouts this year. No.
I know. Moving on. All right, there you go. This State in Football History, Happy Birthday, Gail Sayers, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. In the meantime, you can visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. Tony, yesterday you caught up with Austin Pastor.
Yeah.
Jaguar right tackle and a guy who is hoping to solidify the faith that the team had in him towards the end of the season, and we expect him to, as the incumbent, be the starting right tackle for this football team this year. Tony's conversation with Austin Pastor right now.
Here with Austin Pastor, and we're a week into this thing with OTAs in the books, at least for this week. How do you feel about where you are?
Feeling pretty good. It's kind of getting back into the swing of things here, but it's been going well.
And for you, when you're coming to these OTAs, obviously non-contact, what are you working on, focusing on during these weeks?
Focusing a lot on my pass set. I really want to get it down and be very comfortable with it so that, going into training camp, it feels really good.
How do you feel about your role with this team? I know last year you're coming in, you're fighting for a spot on the roster in a lot of ways. This year you're coming in as a starter. Is there a different mentality for you?
I don't think so. I think it's all just about improvement. It doesn't really matter where you are in the depth chart. It just matters about getting better each day and being ultimately trying to reach your goal of being the best you can be.
And the team feels confident enough in you. They're not bringing in a lot of guys to really compete for that right tackle spot. Coach Bradley even singled you out today as one of the guys that he likes the way that you look there at that right tackle spot. Is that pretty cool stuff to hear?
Oh, it's amazing to hear. You got to love it when your head coach compliments you, so... That's great.
And Coach Gus, just being around him on a day-to-day basis, a lot of people thought when he came here, this can't be real. A guy can't have that much energy, but it's every day, isn't it?
It's every day, and it's continued through all of last year, and it's still going. So, I don't see him slowing down anytime soon.
And for Coach Fish, the offense he wants to bring in, how comfortable are you in a zone-blocking scheme?
I feel good about it. I like the I like the concepts that we're running, and I'm excited to run these schemes.
When you go back to last year, with where you were at this point last year, you feel like your head was maybe spinning a little bit more than it is at this point this year?
Yeah, we were just learning a new offense last year, so there was a lot of words and terms we needed to learn, and it feels a little bit better this year, and no sense we can help the rookies out a little bit with that kind of stuff.
And with the playing time that you got during the regular season last year, how beneficial is that for you coming now into this season?
Well, it's extremely beneficial. Anytime you get a chance to play in a game and feel that game speed and play against some of the top pass rushers in the league, it really gives you an opportunity to improve.
Was there a kind of a welcome to the league moment for you during the season at all last year?
Well, my rookie year, I actually started a couple games at guard, so... I would say probably in that year there was a little bit. My rookie year, I think it was the second game we played the Patriots, and that was kind of you know, one of the, you know, really felt like, you know, I'm in the NFL now for whatever reason.
Are you more comfortable at tackle than at guard? Do you still feel like you're comfortable at either spot?
Yeah, I think I'm probably more comfortable at tackle. You know, I like to think I can still, you know, coach the guys up at guard too, but I definitely feel a little bit better at tackle.
Who's the toughest guy to block on this team? In the league that you've seen so far, I'll ask you that in a second, but on this team, who's the toughest guy to block?
On this team, toughest guy to block. I would probably say in the pass rush, Babin.
And when you were playing guard, I know you didn't get to go up against Marks a lot in practice, right?
No, not too much. In OTAs, I did. And you know, it's a little different when you're not wearing pads, so it's kind of hard to say inside. But, yes, and Derek would definitely be a great choice. And Roy Miller does a great job, too, on run defense.
What about outside of this roster? Who's the toughest guy you've gone up against?
There's been a few. I don't want to leave anyone out.
It's all right. We won't consider it disrespect.
No, J.J. Watt, obviously, is a very good defender. Robert Mathis, definitely the toughest for me to block as far as pass rush goes.
What about trash talkers? Is JJ the trash talker?
I haven't really played against too many trash talkers, at least not to me. I heard him talking trash to some of my teammates before, but yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anyone.
How about away from the field? What kind of stuff do you enjoy doing outside of football?
I enjoy playing golf, ping pong, playing some video games, just hanging out with friends, that kind of stuff.
What kind of games are you into?
I like FIFA. FIFA's probably my number one game. I like Battlefield 2. Something different.
You going one-on-one with any of the guys in the locker room, especially on FIFA?
Yeah, FIFA. I just beat Buenco here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I just beat him twice yesterday, or 2 days ago now, so... Yeah, I feel pretty good about that.
And the golf, what's the handicap right now?
Ooh, I don't want to talk about that. It's pretty high.
And 10 seconds here, just talking to the fans here at Jacksonville as we get ready for the 2014 season. Anything you want to say?
Thanks for all the support. Come out. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, Austin's fired up.
Simmer down there, O'Halloran. Tony's new best friend. Hey, he plays FIFA.
The AP. It's going to stand for all pro.
That's right, buddy.
But in seriousness.
Very nice. Better than the juicy peaches for JP.
feel good story. I mean, who?
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Mean, you know, in NFL terms, a complete unknown.
Yeah, I mean, I asked Dave Caldwell, in, I think it was March, I said, what was your first thought on Austin when you saw him? And he said, why the hell is he playing guard?
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Moved him out, got him a chance, got his chance through injury, and capitalized.
And, you know, maybe not penned in yet, but
his job
number
to
two
lose.
Pencil at least.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, his job to lose.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, all right, let's continue on. Coming up next, Jonathan Cyprian. Tony and I got in here early today and talked with him. He's getting ready to work out this morning. You'll hear from the Jags' second-year safety. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac has served as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville. Absolutely no dealer fees. And by the way, Claude Nolan Cadillac, the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida to sell and service the ELR. They've got an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair all models. Claude Nolan Cadillac guaranteeing you that they'll offer the highest level in customer service and care, the elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac just a step away. Build your lasting relationship by logging on to claudenolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call them at 642-5111. Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor. We'll be back with Jonathan Cyprian. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Click your heels and repeat after me. There's no place like home.
You could ask the wizard for something, too.
1010XL 92.5 FM, home of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live at Everbank Field, and we've got Jonathan Cyprian sitting down with us in the studio. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How you doing, Mike?
We're good. First week of OTAs in the books. You're no longer a rookie. How'd the week go?
It went pretty good. Went pretty good. Everybody's flying around. Really excited to be out there.
And for you, I know it's coming into your second year now, going through this process again of OTAs and the off season. Do you feel like your head is spinning less than it was at this point last year?
Definitely. You kind of know more what's going on. You know the schedule, and you know the plays more. You know, you can not only help yourself, but you can help people around you.
You come in as a rookie. It's tough to, I think, assert yourself, you know, as a leader, even though it's a young team. But Gus Bradley has singled you out in that capacity. He talked about you yesterday, thought you had a good week of practice. Do you feel like now, despite the fact that you're only going into year number two, you've got a lot of young guys, and you're in this system now, and they're counting on you to kind of show them the way.
Yeah, if I've been given that opportunity by Gus, I definitely take it and just continue to do what I came here for. I just want to try to be myself and rub off on the people the right way.
And how gratifying is it for you that yesterday when Coach Bradley is asked about who stood out, you know, you're one of the guys that he mentions. How cool is that to come from your head coach that, yeah, Sip is one of the guys that's jumped off the field for me?
Oh, well, that's great. You know, I go out and practice and try to give my all, you know, trying to get better every day as Gus and all of our coaching staff preaches. So for him to notice that and recognize it, I really appreciate it.
You know, people look at your school, they call you a small school. You're not a small school. A school's got, what, 50,000 enrollment, something like that, right? It's pretty big, but didn't play in the BCS conference, right? And you've only got your own perspective to fall back on. You can't know what it's like to go to Michigan, say, but do you think, you know, the jump to the NFL is big for anybody? You think it's more difficult when you come from, I don't want to insult you, a lower level of competition, you know, Conference USA compared to, say, the SEC?
Well, you know, I think the difference between the different conferences and colleges is not the talent, I would say, always, but I would say the depth in the talent. I think our first string at many D1 schools that you would technically say smaller schools, be able to compete versus a lot of schools around the country, but it's just later on in the game is where people get wear down. Another thing I can say is that even though I've come from a smaller school, I go through the same struggles as Ace went and same struggles as Denard went through. So, you know, just coming in and making that transition, I wouldn't say it's too much of a difference.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about depth and how you get worn down over the course of a game. Gus talked about this week playing fast. He says playing fast to him is not going out there and play one of the series and flying around. Anybody can do that. It's how can you do that 8 or 9 plays deep on a series. You feel like, I mean, there's not a ton of substituting going on. Certainly for you, you're not coming off the field. You feel like this team, though, is going to be a little bit better in that capacity in terms of overall depth to be able to, you know, kind of persevere a little deeper into the series and deeper into games.
Yes, yes. And I think we're going to build that by doing it through practice, putting us in those situations where we get kind of tired, where you think you can get where you can get kind of weary and try to break, but let's get to that level and then try to push through it.
And I know it's just OTAs, but speaking to that point, all the additions in free agency on the defensive line, how much do you feel like that potentially can help you guys, especially you in the secondary?
I think it could definitely help us with the great pass rush. It definitely correlates to how great your DBs could be. So with the depth that we have now at defensive line, I truly think that it can help us better as a whole defense and as a secondary.
Tell us from a defender's perspective, you got a lot of new wide receivers on the other side of the ball. Ace Sanders said, man, it's like night and day how much talent they've got now. A couple of young guys in the second round, some undrafted free agents trying to make their mark as well. Is it noticeable to you that the overall talent at wide receiver is better?
It is kind of noticeable to me. I see guys, you know, there's no drop balls. Dudes are diving on the floor to get them. They're going deep. There's a lot of speed out there at wide receiver. I'm excited to see them. I mean, I don't like them catching passes on
right. RBDs. those roster spots, I mean, we could pretty much figure the top four in some order with Cecil at the top. You know, and Ace is going to have his spot in those two second-round picks. But it's pretty ferocious, man, for, you know, Mike Brown and the rest of those guys fighting for however many they end up keeping.
You know, our whole organization strives off competition. So not only Mike Brown and all the receivers, but myself and the defense and the offense. You know, every day we come to work and try to compete, and you know, you have to practice and play as if somebody's coming to take your spot. So you know, that competition is just going to make everybody better.
And with all those young guys at the wide receiver position, especially, can you sense a role of leadership being put on a guy like Cecil Shorts, even in just this first week of OTAs out there on the field?
Yeah, you know, you would count on someone like Cecil Shorts, who's been in the system since last year, to help the younger guys, and you know, and speed along their learning and try to help that learning curve that you have so it can be more smoother than difficult for them.
We've talked to you before. We know you're a mature guy in the sense that if I ask you to tell me what you need to do better, you'll tell me everything, right? And Gus likes people who, as he says, know what their limitations are because that's what you need to work on. That's how you get better. Give me a specific one thing that you looked at as a rookie. You said, man, I really need to tighten this up going into year 2.
Well, I would definitely have to say, I would say everything.
You know, of course you would.
Even the things that you're good at, you know, you can definitely get better at them. But, you know, some of the things I want to get better at is, I'll just definitely say cleaning up your feet work and your overall techniques as a defensive back. You know, I think sometimes our athleticism and speed could get you out and bail you out of situations that you really don't have to tap into if your technique is correct. So I just want to work on my technique as far as backpedaling and get out of breaks so, you know, I can get to the ball a little bit quicker and that give you more opportunities.
For you, Sip, going back to your rookie year, the second half of the year you were very much improved over the first half. What clicked for you, did you feel like, going into that second half? Was it just having those 8 games under your belt and you felt more comfortable in the defense? What happened there?
That's what it was. I believe it was the 8 games under my belt. And after the bye week, I honestly just said to myself, you know what, I know what I'm doing now. Let's go out there and play. I had encouragement from my whole team, and Coach Gus challenged us on going into the bye week for us to come back with a better mindset and come back together as a whole team, to improve in the second half, and we did.
You know, right now we talk with Jonathan Cyprian of the Jacksonville Jaguars here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL. Josh Evans out for maybe till training camp. He's had the bone spurs removed from his foot, so competition continues as an opportunity for guys like Winston Guy to kind of show up. Give us a scouting report on him physically. It's easy to notice him on the field. He's a big guy. He can run pretty well.
Yeah, he definitely can. You know, he's really explosive. You know, he has a quick twitch to him. He's an athletic dude. He's doing great for us, not only last season, but he's doing pretty good in the first week OTAs.
And, he, you know, Gus said, too, it's kind of like having two strong safeties on the field. But he feels like he's got that lateral quickness that he can do enough to play free safety. Yeah, it's kind of nice to have a couple of thumpers, though, back on the line with the last line of defense back there.
Definitely. You know, we could we have a last line of defense there that can definitely put us some intimidation starting here in practice and then going into week one when everything kicks off.
I know Josh Evans has been around the locker room for the last couple days on that ridiculous looking cart.
I think he got it from Maurice. Did Maurice leave that around here or what?
Have you had a chance to talk to him? How's he doing?
Oh, he's doing good. You know, I talked to him before he went into the surgery and after, and even now when he comes in for meetings, his spirits are up. He knows what's going on. He's still familiar with the defense, and he can't wait to get back.
Educate me here, okay? I am a guy, I go out there, like I think most of the media, if they'll be honest, and we watch the football in the air, right? It's easy. We can tell if the quarterbacks are throwing the ball accurately. We can see if the wide receivers are getting open and somewhat if the DBs are doing their job. But these are non-contact practices. That's not how the game of football is played. What am I looking for beyond those specific positions? Give me something about anything that I can know. How do I know if an offensive lineman is doing his job? How do I know if a defensive lineman is doing his job? How do I know if a strong safety who wants to hit people is doing his job?
Well, if you don't see defensive linemen ducking out of the way of the quarterback, you know that the offensive line did their job in blocking them before the quarterback threw the ball.
I got you. So if the guys aren't pulling up yeah, before they blast somebody.
Definitely. You know, we're going to pull up on every time as far as safeties coming down on receivers, defensive linemen not touching the quarterback. We're going to make sure we do that. So right now you won't see the aggressiveness on actually contacting receivers, but you will see aggressiveness in coverage and trying to, you know, put our hands on the line of scrimmage and shadowing them and denying receivers from catching the ball, and also aggressiveness on the angles that we take as safeties coming downhill to make tackles on people who do have the ball.
You know, Gus said you guys probably think he's crazy how much he preaches to really protect your teammates. When you see a guy like Sean Lee in Dallas, man, his season's over before it begins. You guys very aware of that? I mean, is that like something that you know, maybe not dwell on constantly, but to remind each other that, hey, you know, we're trying to get better, but there's a limit to what we want to do here.
Yeah, there's definitely a limit, and we understand that even before the unfortunate incident that happened in Dallas, it just reaffirmed that, you know, we have to take care of ourselves.
And adding the auto position now on defense, just another position where you guys are going to try to pass rush from, does that change anything for you guys in the secondary at all? How does that affect you?
Not really. There's minor glitches in defense where instead of when safeties, when we come down, we'll be on the line. And I guess now we'll be kind of off the ball more than usual since we have the auto where he will be kind of lined up on the ball. But it doesn't change too much at all.
All right. I think you're just changing names of things just to confuse us a little bit. Strong side line. Sam's out. Otto's in. Just keep calling you the strong safety. For you, OTAs next week. I mean, just more of the same. Just keep plugging away.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we want to improve from last week. We're going to watch the film from these 3 days of practice. We're going to go over what we've been getting from the offense, what we've been doing personally as individuals and as a team defense, and we're going to improve and, do a lot better this week.
Couple things before we let you go, Sip. How was the London trip, and what did you guys do while you were over there?
London was great. We interacted with so many fans. We went to the ESPN that they have over there, which is called, I believe, Action Sports. Yeah, we went over there.
We'll go with that.
So we spoke to them, and our main reason over there was explaining the draft to them. They were making predictions, and we told them our experience. Myself, Denard, and Dwayne, we all three went over there, and we went over there and told them our experience of our draft so they can kind of have a feeling of what was going on for the kids coming into the NFL this year.
Did you go to the rookie premiere last year? I know a couple of the guys are out there this year.
They're there, but I didn't. Denard held it down for all of us last year.
Yeah, David Garrard said that, they pose these guys for action photos. They have them jumping on trampolines and landing on mattresses to make it look like they're catching footballs, man. It sounds like something that you're probably okay missing last year. Jonathan Ciprian, man, have a successful off season, and we look forward to big things for you in year two. Thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Has Telvin Smith stopped yet? Is he ever quiet? Does he ever sit down?
Telvin Smith, he yaps a lot, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I love his energy now. I love him. He's doing great for us, man. And I'm happy to see him out there having fun.
Hey, we appreciate it. I hope all you guys have fun, winning a few more games certainly make it the most fun this year. Thanks again.
All right, thank you.
All right, there he goes. Jonathan Ciprian here with us on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. You just never know. You got to listen for the whole show, the entirety of the show. You never know what's going to pop up on Jaguars Today. We are not done yet. First month almost in the books. And we got a list of people to thank, and we'll get to that coming up quickly. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today asked you which non-BCS conference player was the best draft pick in Jaguar history. Some have pointed out Fred Taylor because there was no BCS at the time. I'm taking that out as a technicality because you can argue those guys till you're blue in the face, Ryan. But clearly, Rasheed Mathis.
That'd be my pick.
I think be most people's pick. But a lot of support for Brad Meester, mm-hmm. considering played more games than anyone in team history out of Northern Iowa. I think you can make a case for David Garrard being pretty successful as a fourth-round pick out of ECU. And you hope that Cecil Shorts and Jonathan Ciprian will kind of continue that trend and get in the conversation.
Yeah, and they're on their way to being in that. Not there yet, but look at Rasheed made the Pro Bowl. Meester had the longevity. David started 2 playoff games.
Sure.
And those guys haven't done that yet.
Yeah, at this point. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, which includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. You can visit tombush.com for more information when you're in the market for your next new or pre-owned vehicle. And follow them on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors. And like I said, you never know what's going to happen. Look who's here. All right, Gus Bradley popping into the Jaguars Today studios. We wrap up the month of March. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great.
Good week?
It's been a really good week. Just finishing up with our meetings today with our players after 3 really good days of OTAs. So a lot of growth. You can see it take place even from day one to the third day.
I got to ask you something that I've been wondering about for a while. Educate me. I asked Jonathan Ciprian to do this this morning as well. We watch the football in the air. I can watch the QBs. I can watch the receivers and the DBs. What else am I looking for when it's a non-contact practice? What are you looking for in evaluating some of these other positions?
Well, you've heard me say many times it's a precision league, and I think it's about execution, and it's hard without any pads on. But if you do things right and you use your techniques, you should be able to, to make it simulate football as much as possible. So, we're looking for angles, leverage angles, certain techniques by the offensive line and defensive line, just, the proper footwork. I mean, all those things are so important to play good football. And we get a chance to do that because we get a chance to put it on tape and watch it and evaluate it. And we've got a lot of good evaluation that's taking place.
I'm just going to stick with saying who did well, Coach.
Well, one thing you hit on the instruction period you had, new to the practice format. to give some of these younger guys a chance. Do you see that? Did you see them just in 3 days taking ownership of that and say, hey, this is my chance?
Yeah, I did. I think for the guys that were involved in it, they really appreciate it. I mean, it's hard. You know, just look at our Leo position. We've had, what, five or six guys there? You know, and a guy like Gerald Rivers, for example, it's hard for him, even though, you know, he gets 75 reps, you know, he may only get 5 reps, you know, through all those periods because you have so many guys at that one position. Well, this opportunity period gives him a chance maybe to get 6 reps right in a row, you know, or 7 reps, and it gives a great evaluation. And a lot of times that's what these players are looking for. Just give me an opportunity. Just give me an opportunity to showcase my talents and what I can bring to the table. And I think that's what we're finding out in that period, and the guys are really appreciating it.
Yeah, we talked to a lot of players here. Obviously, you had a young team last year, so a guy like Sip going into his second year. You're going into your second year. What did you say, man, we got to do something different in this regard? What did you learn that you're applying now in your new OTAs?
That's a great question. I think you always want to be able to evaluate yourself and have others evaluate you. And I think that we're going to remain consistent that our approach is the same as far as, you know, we're really trying to get better every day and every opportunity we have. It's not about tomorrow. It's about today and taking advantage of it. But I think, you know, for example, we talked a lot about getting better and we saw some guys get better. But I think we wanted to have a method to it. We wanted to have a reason why guys got better. So we've come up in the off season with a way to, you know, create a vision for our players and then for the coach to keep them connected to the vision. And then eventually the player will own the vision and it'll become part of his traits. And I think that we've defined things even more. So some of the same teaching principles, same philosophy, yet we're getting them stronger. And we're sending a stronger message to our team. And I think that we're already seeing that benefit.
Chip Kelly said something interesting in Philadelphia. Asked him to compare year one to year two. He said, not even a comparison. I mean, guys got here, know their roles and stuff. Did you see that the guys coming back had that similar recall?
I do. I think that there is. It's you know, it's tough. There's to have a number of different head coaches, a number of different offense, defense, special team schemes. That's difficult on a player. So to be able to come back and have the, you know, the same scheme on offense, defense, special teams for a second year, you can see that that in itself has relieved some anxiety from the players. And they're really being able to concentrate on not just knowing what they're supposed to do, but how they're going to do it. And I think you're seeing some of the finer details. I'll give you an example. I think last year, you know, when you watch tape, you might see some guys on the ground just, you know, not by any contact or anything, just, and they're thinking too much. And there was, I think, the first practice, like 13, 14 guys on the ground. And this year, our first day, there was 3. You know, and you're just seeing it. And that, it just shows guys are playing with better technique. They're playing with more confidence. And they're playing, you know, at a faster speed as far as knowledge of the scheme.
Gus Bradley here with us on Jaguars Today. The rookie class in general, they've had the one rookie minicamp, and most of them had 3 days of OTAs, certainly some of the guys at the rookie premiere. But as a group, how they handled their first experience?
It was pretty good. And I'd say from top to bottom, from, you know, our first-round pick and Blake all the way down to a guy like Copeland as a wide receiver and Wells as an offensive lineman, all those guys, you know, it's a good group. A good group of guys, and you see some of the traits that we're looking for. I think that's our scouting department with Dave heading it up and Kyle. They've done a good job. We're all on the same page exactly what we're looking for in our offense and defensive scheme, and to bring players that fit that mode and to see them really excel at an early stage is good. It's really cool, and I know especially that offensive line, some of those 3 younger guys or 4 younger guys in the offensive line, they've really done a nice job. They really captured our attention.
Asked a veteran on offense yesterday who stood out and automatically said, Allen Robinson is an adult.
Yeah.
And he's showing that, right?
Yeah, he really is. He's just real mature, real mature. He's I think his mindset is he comes in, he soaks everything in, he goes out there and he competes his tail off. Not a real vocal guy, not you know, flamboyant. He just works. He works really hard, and that's really caught the attention of our players.
And works well too. I mean, it's not just that he approaches it as an adult. I mean, he plays like a man out there. I think you have to be happy with what you've seen in the early returns.
Right, with just his physical development.
Yeah.
I mean, big and tall and strong, and you know, those are all great attributes to have as a wide receiver.
I mean, we're 2 months from the pads going on, but do you see from roster spots maybe 40 to 53 there's just going to be a lot more decisions.
Yeah, there is. Much more. It's going to be Dave and I are already in that process where we're sitting down and we evaluate the tape and then we have discussions. And, you know, every day I've learned this. Larry Coyer, you know, always told me, he said, you know, personnel placement. And for an hour every day, let's talk personnel. Let's talk personnel. Mm-hmm. Let's talk personnel. And I think sometimes you get away from that as a coaching staff. You talk scheme and, you know, tomorrow should we go no huddle? Should we go 2 minute? And sometimes you forget about that. But we do talk about personnel. You might not make any changes or any depth chart moves, but you're just talking about guys. And that's what we're doing a lot now. You know, we talk about a lot of our guys, and that opportunity period at the end has helped with that.
You mentioned yesterday several guys that have stood out to you, caught your eye. One of them was Andre Branch. What does he continue to need to work on to, you know, pick up and carry on with that?
Well, I think one of the things that we saw with Andre Branch last year was he really took ownership in playing with really good effort, great effort, and that showed up. And I think that was one of the things we challenged him on. He did a great job. This year, it's just his bend on his pass rush, his flexibility. You know, it's one of the things that we had a vision talk with him on and said, hey, this is an area we really want to attack and get better at. And he knew that in the off season. And now just watching him in drill work and on the field, you can see he's really attacked that part of his game. And you see better bend. You see better technique, his get off. He's just playing with a lot more confidence, and it's really cool. It's almost like a proud parent. You're watching this guy develop right in front of your eyes, and you're saying, this is cool. We're not in pads, and we're going in the right direction. We still have a lot of work to do, but you're excited about the progress he's made.
How much at this time of year can you meet with a guy like that individually and younger players? Because once that season starts, it's all about that game.
Right.
I mean, are you able to you know, bounce around the meeting rooms a little bit and say, hey, this is what I thought of you and you and you and you?
Well, that's the part that we said earlier. There's one thing to talk about getting better, then you do have a plan in place. And mm-hmm. we talked about one of those phases was stay connected with the player.
Right.
And, you know, like for Andre, he really wanted to work on his bend and you know, on his pass rush. Well, he needs somebody to help him keep connected to this. And in our case, it's the coach. And the coach's job. So we'll pull out 4 or 5 plays and sit down and watch it with him. We'll talk to him on the way out to the field just to keep him connected to it so he can start taking ownership with them. It's hard. You know, people say, you know, is coaching hard? That part is really hard. It's really hard. And because you've got a number of guys. And for us, it doesn't matter if you're the first guy or the fifth guy. We're going to treat everybody the same as far as we're going to get everybody better because we're going to need everybody.
You and Chris Clemens good buds again?
Yeah. No, it was great. You know what? That's what I told him. He got a little strained for a couple minutes, but no, he is. You know, I gravitate towards him. I really do trust him. I know just knowing him for so many years, the work ethic he has, and he'll be ready to go, and we'll be excited to see him along with all the other guys we have.
On our behalf, and I know Jaguar fans out there everywhere who won't get a chance to express it, the best to George Yarno and his family, obviously.
Boy, it's just a tough situation. But you know what? It's unfortunate news. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, what I love about our staff and our team and this organization is everybody is supported there and the strength. And it's really brought people closer together. And you can imagine, now one thing about George Yarno, he is a fighter now. He is, anybody who's been around him and knows his style of coaching, he has that attitude. And the arrow's going up. And I know he's excited about, you know, attacking this issue. And he told me the other day, he said, it's not, you know, why me, it's why not me. Mm-hmm. You know, and he has that mentality. And, you know, I think we all feel good about, you know, going into this treatment plan.
Yeah, attitude, state of mind is what everybody says. Very important.
Yeah, that's right.
In that regard. You're a guy who knows a lot about good attitude and good state of mind. Gus, have a great weekend, all right? We'll see you out there Monday.
I appreciate it. Thank you
all
so
right,
much.
Thanks.
There he goes. Gus Bradley, head coach of your Jaguars here on Jaguars Today. Not too shabby for a last-minute pop-in on the program, eh?
No. It was a great interview.
Like that? I thought you did particularly well.
Oh, thank you. So do you.
In that regard. Today, well, thanks to Austin Pastor for coming on with Fat Tony and Jonathan Ciprian for popping in. First month officially in the books. We started April 28th. It's the last show in May. We'll be back in the month of June, we hope, on Jaguars Today here live from Everbank from 10 to noon every day. So let me thank some people that helped us here this month, including yourself, Ryan, and Tony. John Osher, Mark Long, Jeff Loggeman, David Garrard, Pete Prisco, all guys who co-hosted throughout the month of May. Others who appeared on the program from the Jaguar media, including Mike DiRocco, Brian Sexton, J.P. Shadrick, of course, Gus Bradley. I think that was maybe his fourth interview he's done with us.
It's at least three.
Something like that. Dave Caldwell, GM of the Jags, Bob Babich, and Jed Fish, your defensive and offensive coordinators, Jerry Sullivan, Tom Mislinski, the strength coach, the returning players for the Jags, Chad Henney, Cecil Shorts, Ace Sanders, Denard Robinson, Carson Tinker, Cyprian Pazlesny, Sinderic Marks, told you about Austin Pastor, the free agent guys, Zane Beatles, Toby Gerhart, Dakota Watson, the rookie class of Blake Bortles, Allen Robinson, Brandon Linder, Telvin Smith, Chris Smith, still trying to track down Marquise Lee, aren't we, at this point in time? And a huge thanks to Dan Edwards, Ryan Robinson, Tad Dickman, and Joe Fortunato,
absolutely,
who are our in-house support staff here on Jaguars Today. Couldn't get it done. Stuff like that. Gus Bradley popping in takes a little coordination. We appreciate those guys. Final thought for you, Ryan O'Halloran, for the weekend?
Not for the weekend. Looking forward to next Thursday when the fans have a chance to come out, and we'll pay attention a little bit more on that day.
There you go. We will take notes.
Yesterday we spent 10 minutes talking about our favorite Beastie Boys songs on the show.
Did that happen? I missed that.
Where was that?
Might have been when you guys are still on the air.
Wow. Yeah, that was the early portion of practice. Yeah. So you could actually comment about the early portion of practice, but Tony and I always miss that. We're out there for 11 on 11s. All right. That'll do it for us. Thanks again to everybody at 1010XL.